Oh,
I don't know if we'll do this on air or not.
Welcome to another edition of PBJ. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
It's Friday. We got nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about. I'm grateful. I had some stuff going on the last couple of weeks. Feeling a lot better today.
So that's good
to hear. It sounds like you might have a direction to improve the situation too.
We do. That's good. A couple directions.
Is this about the ED or?
I wasn't going to talk about your issue, DK.
Sorry, on air.
Okay, but sorry,
you said you have a gift for us.
He's just Jay for the EV. He's an Elonator, by the way.
What's the... you said EV.
Yeah.
I thought you said ED.
DK is fully wild enough. He did.
All right. We have lots to talk about today.
Blood flow issues.
We don't have to talk about health issues.
Do we need to do a basketball... segment, or are you?
No.
Nothing to talk about?
I'm not wearing any Iowa State gear today.
It's over.
All right.
What's unfortunate? Well, every team loses except for one, and my team lost. So.
But you made it far.
It's a good season.
Could be worse.
I like loyal to the soil.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, I still got to represent Memphis. Steve sent me stuff that Memphis is apparently the most hood city in the country.
I'm not a Memphis hater. I'm just the NBA players are Memphis haters. I just randomly saw that in video.
As I told DK, I am loyal to the soil, but I can also admit Memphis is pretty good. So.
I like that phrase.
Yeah. But so much to talk about today.
Do you want to go just hit them in order, or what's burning on your?
Well, what's top of mind? Yeah, let's talk about what's exciting right now.
Maybe the least exciting one. No, Bitcoin Core privacy. I could describe that really quick.
DK, what's top of mind for you?
We're wilding out over here.
We can do that another show if you want.
How about this? Everybody's talking about this Bitcoin quantum, like the Google thing. Everybody's asking me about it.
Caltech.
I haven't studied any of the updates since like the Quantum Summit a year ago. So I don't know. Has anything substantially changed since then?
Well, for those that didn't see, there's another wave of discussion and drama around quantum and Bitcoin this past week because of Google dropped a paper. Which we can talk about a little bit. And then there was another startup, I forget the name of it, but...
in collaboration with Caltech, right?
Announcing advances with a different approach to quantum computing, neutral atom technology or something, far beyond my understanding. But those two both dropped this week, and it just... causes a lot of hysteria. So yeah, I'll try to give my take and what I think is a balanced take on this. I think the simplest way to explain like the Google paper, because the Google paper claims that there's a 20x performance improvement in the algorithm to break ECC and break Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies.
And just to be clear, when Steve's saying elliptic curve cryptography, he's talking about signatures for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because there's different kinds of cryptography for different things. So
that sounds substantial. And they also, I mean, they released it in a clever, probably responsible way, clever way, definitely good marketing. So some combination of all those. And that they did not reveal the details, but they did a zero knowledge proof to prove that they have the details. So that was kind of interesting. But it definitely spices.
Do you know how that worked? I saw that in the headlines, but I didn't. Was there much about how that actually
worked? Let's have our resident ZKB expert describe.
I didn't think they were advanced enough to do that, so no idea.
I didn't read the details. Okay. But in any case, interestingly, the lead person author for that paper is Hartman Nevin, who I worked closely with at Google long ago. He and I worked on Wingman together, which is the code name for Google Glass.
Yeah.
Sounds
like someone that should stop by Presidio Bitcoin. Assuage the FUD. Though.
I can reach out to him. But in any case, a 20x speed up, that sounds substantial. And let's just assume that claim is true. It's very material. So I don't think we should dismiss this announcement. But I think the best framing that I've heard on it is n minus one. And
yes, you
Yeah, but you, yeah, but I told you that, but I didn't explain it to you, so I'll explain it to you now.
Where n can be
anything. Where n is the number of years before we have a cryptographically relevant quantum computer. And as we've discussed and people have heard, there's a wide range of views there from like
it's impossible.
2 years to 5 years to 15, 50 or impossible. So, right. And I certainly don't know. And I really don't think anyone knows. We just have to keep evaluating each new announcement or piece of progress to understand what probability we might assign to that.
Yeah.
But if n minus one, just because, you know, if let's say 10 years from now, there is a cryptographically relevant computer that can break Bitcoin keys and it takes a year to crack one key for that computer, then, you know, this announcement or in this breakthrough would shrink that to 2.5 weeks or so, 20 times faster. So kind of n minus one.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it changes much. Now, if you keep if every week Google announces a 20x speed up and then it gets it down to like just, you know, one qubit is needed to break Bitcoin, and then, you know, that's a different story. So I don't think we dismissed this, but like it didn't, like some of the news headlines were outrageous, saying like it's, you know, imminent.
Right,
and
And I want to just pause on that one point. I mean, I think obviously everything should be balanced. No one's saying, you know, FUD or freak out. And I do think we should also talk a lot about the solutions that are being developed, because that to me is really exciting. But I do think one thing that is a little concerning to me is, even if you view this, I mean, it's obviously a potentially high impact scenario, even if you view it as low likelihood or far out, I think one thing in the Bitcoin community in general that's changing, thankfully, but is I feel like people have not been AGI pilled enough or like AI pilled in general enough. And so, you know, when you have the brightest minds in the world with access to the best AI in the world at places like Google, we don't really know, like we have multiple S curves happening at once, and we don't know how compounding S curves are going to result in faster scientific breakthroughs. So I think that that's one thing I just really have not liked about the quantum discourse. Not saying it's possible, not possible. That's clearly above my pay grade, but I don't think enough people are, you know, waiting that their past view of how these quantum developments or the rate of progress worked is potentially completely unlinked with the future as AI gets a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I often bring to mind the, have you guys read the famous Kurzweil book?
Which one?
Singularity is Near?
I mean, long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. I think I read it 20-something years ago. But it talked, I remember, about in the 90s, they were trying to predict how long it would take to map a single human genome. And I think all the experts said it was 10 or 15 years or something. And then I think they solved it in, you know, 3 or 4 years. Or
right.
And that's not to say that we should be more paranoid or respond to all this FUD, but just that I think to double down on what you're saying is the S curves and the compounding nature of how these technologies converge and discover new things may not be easy for us to sort of project out.
Exactly.
And so it doesn't mean let's all panic, but it does mean like interesting to keep an eye on this stuff. And, you know, if it does turn out that there's a new announcement every few weeks, then, you know, pay more attention even.
And I would be very happy on many, many fronts. I don't think it's just for quantum, and more inclined to take seriously more, I guess, sort of Bitcoin and quantum researchers who are also tracking heavily what's happening at the frontier labs and have like a real sense, not just guessing, of how far along DeepMind and Anthropic actually are.
I'd also, I totally acknowledge the point you made, Max. It's interesting then to observe it in other fields, both physical hardware and then software. So like mapping genome and AI advancements, those are two things that, at least genome, it happened faster than thought.
Genome, is that a French?
Is it good?
Oh, good.
And then AI, you know, it's been promised forever, but then all of a sudden, boom, came out of the scene. But like fusion, like when is that going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. That's been right around the corner for decades. But maybe AI accelerates that. Maybe next year is the year of fusion. We don't know.
Yeah.
Quantum computers feels more like fusion to me because of the physics and the very physical hard engineering problems. But we'll see. But I don't, I mean, all that, I think all that changes. I mean, even if you hold that belief, like, oh, there's going to be this rapid change, it just changes your probability distribution might be different than someone else's.
Yeah.
If you don't take a super extreme view, I think one has to believe, yes, there should be development in a plan put in place, a plan for different scenarios, one where it does take 10 plus years, in which that's a slow and steady plan,
yeah,
and incorporates the latest advances of cryptography so we don't suffer too many drawbacks by upgrading. And then emergency plans too. If we're caught off guard and it does happen really quick, so that we save Bitcoin. So I've talked about maybe a few weeks ago saying that Presidio Bitcoin's putting it together like a 12-page report.
Which is
soon,
very needed.
2 weeks.
Yeah, I was about to say.
We now
how
hope,
many more 2 weeks?
We now
we
hope
to
publish it next week.
Austin, where are you at?
I think it's really good. I think it's a really balanced account. And it covers like describing the risks, describing sort of where we're at, a plan, these different plans for different scenarios.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be good once it's published.
And I think we should cover also like all the different worst case scenarios and what that means and the potential solutions. Because like, just because I'm saying this, I'm not saying we need to panic. Like, you know, there's a lot of different routes this could go. The one thing I will say though is, even though I'm more AGI pilled and concerned about this maybe than some people are, I also tend to agree with some stuff, I guess, Taylor has said in the past of like, look, I agree with him. There's always risk of like, if you act too soon, then you end up, you know, messing up a system that doesn't need to get fixed. So I certainly balance those concerns. And I also agree with him that like, it does feel like in addition to the Frontier Labs, and I don't know who's tracking this super closely in addition to what they release in public, but like, it's also like, I would be watching the most closely of like, what is DOD, NSA, what's the intelligence community saying? What is Apple saying? Like the big tech companies that are actually tracking this closely and like super classified government divisions, that's what I would be using as my like bellwether.
I agree that should be paid attention to, but a couple of caveats to that.
Yeah.
One, like NIST has come out saying like all government agencies have to upgrade by 2030, 2035, whatever, things like that. And at first blush, it might seem to imply that that's gotcha. When the government believes there'll be CRQC, right? And that Bitcoin could be broken. But that does not imply that. Mm-hmm. Because, and same with Google, just announced that they've fast-tracked to 2029 as their target date, which is just two to three years away.
Was that an update from this week with that paper?
Okay. I think 2 weeks ago, but like right before this paper.
Yeah.
So people are linking to like, they accelerated to 2029, they're going to upgrade all Google stuff. Mm-hmm. Then they drop a paper with a zero knowledge proof that doesn't reveal the actual 20x improvement. But both the government and Google, there's different applications.
Right.
And some applications are you encrypt data that's supposed to be private. And 40 years from now, you still want it to be private. So if you encrypt it with technology today that is broken in 40 years by a quantum computer, it's no longer private.
Right.
So let's upgrade soon in 3 years. 5-10 years, because we believe in 40 to 50 years, there could very well be a quantum computer that can break the encryption.
Right.
That's a different application than stealing your Bitcoin. So you shouldn't just assume a 2029 deadline means that that's the date that Google believes or the government believes Bitcoin's going to be broken.
Yeah. And also the fact that Google is changing that deadline. Also, I wouldn't put much stock in any number.
The other point, and this is less valuable, but it's a lot easier for Google to upgrade their systems.
Yeah.
Like it's a centralized company. The CEO says, do it. They upgrade their systems. They don't need anyone's cooperation or input or
no consensus.
No consensus. And so that's a huge and that's the case with banks, governments, almost anything else. So that doesn't give an excuse for Bitcoin not to be the Bitcoin ecosystem not to be thinking about it, but it's just a big challenge Bitcoin has that others don't.
Yeah.
The other big challenge is that, with quantum resistant cryptography, the signatures are larger. It's more expensive to compute the signatures, etc. I mean, no one wants that extra cost, but the cost to a scarce resource like the Bitcoin blockchain is much more cost sensitive than a Google or a bank.
And I think it's worth mentioning one very positive side is, you know, while, and this is like my kind of general philosophy with all the AI stuff. Whenever people doomerism, you know, go doomerism or like freak out or whatever, it's like, yes, attackers now have access to AI and can do some really fucked up stuff. The good news is defenders also have access to AI and can play defense much faster than the past. And so I was encouraged just looking a little bit more into like Blockstream's research on there. I think new quantum, I guess, resistant hash-based signature scheme. It looks like those are getting a little bit thinner. I think it's still, is it two orders of magnitude bigger or one order of magnitude bigger?
Well, there's shrinks and shrimps, I believe.
I was thinking shrinks.
So shrinks was from maybe 1 or 2 months ago. Oh. We briefly talked about it on the show, I think. And then shrimps was just the new one. They're actually...
Kind of a bad name, though.
They're very similar, but different, but complementary to each other. So shrinks is a something like 354 byte signature, I think. Mm. Now that the baseline here is a Schnorr signature in Bitcoin today is 64 bytes. Yeah. So it's about 5 times bigger. Which,
not bad.
If that's all you know, that sounds horrible. But compared to the 100 or 1,000 times bigger signatures that most other solutions have, it's 5x is amazing. It comes with a drawback, though, and that you need state. You need off-chain data that you need to retain in order to spend and use that signature, which is not a showstopper, but it's a big drawback.
Yeah.
The new one that they just announced, Shrimps, is around 2,500 bytes. Mm-hmm. So it's about 40x over 64, or 8x worse than Shrimps. It's stateless. So I think the thinking by the authors is that if you have a primary signing device with a key that is never going to be removed, like maybe in an HSM or even
BitKey,
even like your phone or BitKey or whatever, that could use this more optimized version. Mm-hmm. And that's the happy path. That's right. Like where you'd normally spend. And in the recovery scenario, somehow that signing device fails or you lose it or whatever, and now you have to access your backup. The backup in the recovery process would have the larger signature version.
Seems like a great trade-off.
It's a good trade-off. And the reason for that, why not just use the smaller signature everywhere? I think retaining that metadata and extracting it and transitioning it to another device is like a failure mode and tricky.
Yeah.
So to avoid that, you could set it up this way. But that's good because like in the 99% case, you get the smaller signatures. And in the recovery disaster scenario, you haven't lost your money, but you are going to have to pay higher fees.
And for people trying to get an idea of what's this difference in state, would this be fair to sort of describe this as analogous to like a Lightning node?
Yeah, I mean, it has state.
So if you want to keep track of like what your channels, where they're balanced.
Same with like a multi-sig device also has state that you need to state beyond just the private key.
Yeah.
Like the simplest form of Bitcoin, all you need is this big number.
Right.
That's it. But these... Yeah, these other, whether it be Lightning or multi-sig or shrinks, all these require additional state.
Yeah.
And that state would, in this, if I understand right, in this scenario, that state would be kept like on the bit key or kind of in a per user basis. It wouldn't be like a single state held somewhere, kind of replicas of state.
It's not on the blockchain.
Not on the blockchain, but is there some other like a...
Well, it could be stored anywhere. I mean, yeah, the you as the user, you as the private key holder, it's your responsibility to have that state. What the authors are, my understanding of what they're saying is like it's error prone to like try to replicate that everywhere and transfer it to other devices. So like it probably gets produced and stored mm-hmm. in your primary signing device. So you're never like touching it. For recovery modes, you use this other signature type. But
the drawback is you can't just have 12 words and have access to moving Bitcoin, right?
With the combination of these two signatures, you could. Because if your primary signing device has this extra data, if it somehow fails, disappears, whatever, now you don't have that extra data, but your recovery solutions don't use that more optimized signature. It uses the shrimps version. which is stateless. So you don't need anything beyond your.
But that could still be converted, the stateless one, to 12 words or 24 words? Or would you still need some additional file or something saved?
It's stateless.
But
the 12 words is enough.
Yeah, the 12 words would be enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I think it's also worth, actually, one idea, potentially maybe a spiral idea. One thing that I would love to understand better is, are there researchers in this field working on this for Bitcoin who are also seriously paying attention to what's happening at the Frontier Labs? I don't know with Blockstream. I mean, I would guess that they're using AI. I mean, I'm assuming they've got people like Andrew Polster who are already pretty genius. But I think it would be one project I would like to see as a public good is someone thinking about these issues for Bitcoin, putting out research or whatever, but who also has like an actual sense of what's happening at places like Anthropic. Yeah.
That's a good point. I don't know the answer. I'll ask. I'm curious too.
If not, maybe we can
In general, I think Bitcoin developers have been historically a little behind on following the latest AI trends, but I've seen it with my own team at Spiral. Huge shift since December with like the big step up in a capabilities of Opus 4.5 and 4.6.
Yeah.
It's been a complete 180. And now like LDK project is heavily leveraging it. So it's great.
That's awesome.
It's great to see. And the way my team operates, even though I'm the boss, I'm not the boss. They don't really listen to me. So this is definitely like they see the value. They've shifted their thoughts on like this is gone from not helpful for something low level like Lightning Development Kit to being extremely promising. In fact, in a few weeks, I'll talk about something they're doing recently using how they're using AI tools.
I love to hear that.
So we're also, and you know, one of the Spiral devs is a core dev. He has been using it as well. Maybe in a few weeks, I'll talk about how he's using it as well. And we're trying to influence more core devs. Just to see the possibilities with this stuff.
And you guys should publish that too. Like publish how they're using it.
Well, that's one. I mean, Austin Krauss is helping. Yeah. So we'll have a couple of reports. one is already underway and almost ready to go.
I'll have my agent review your reports.
we surveyed 50 Spiral developers and grantees on their AI usage, collected all that data,
cool,
and created a report. And the report has like four different archetypes, like different types of users. So I think Austin's done a really good job on that. So I'm looking forward to publish. I think that's going to come out.
I love it.
2 weeks, maybe even next week.
Can we get a flavor of the archetypes or is that?
Well, it ranges from like sort of more like the non-developer type of person, like a designer, PM, marketing person, and how they are doing things that they could not do before. Like it's literally 0 to 1. Like if you ask like what percentage of performance increase do you get from your productivity, this is like infinity because I couldn't do this before. Yeah. Now I can do it.
Yeah.
All the way down to like a low level protocol developer who historically has been like, this stuff is nonsense. You know, I'm working on
yes, curls.
Very, very, you know, security is of utmost importance. Every little detail matters, dealing with monies, dealing with $1 trillion assets. And then some archetypes in between, including like a builder, like the stuff we talk about a lot on the show and like what you do, David. So so that'll be a good report. And then I expect a separate report too, and maybe 3-4 weeks from now.
So I want to cover a couple of these comments here, and I think it's worth maybe zooming out in a broader discussion of what's happening in quantum. So basically, we have a couple different from Jesse and from Level 99 Slack or Good Name. Basically, everyone's just saying like, hey, quantum is a risk to all kinds of cryptography. Banks use cryptography. Everyone uses cryptography. Why are we so stressed on Bitcoin? It's an everyone problem. I think it's worth pausing and noting why it's a little different for Bitcoin. You already kind of did.
I already did.
But also, but kind of expanding into what that, like, what is the worst case scenario? Because I think a lot of what we're seeing here is there's going to be either way, like FUD within the investment community, and like there already was like the Jefferies dude saying sell because of quantum, whether he means it or not. So I think that's one of the things to address is like, what are we talking about? Like, are we talking about practice? Not again.
DG doesn't get that right. AI. But not your kind of AI. That's Alan Iverson.
That's why my initial group was called AI. 2017, The Truth.
The Truth.
The Truth.
I forgot his nickname.
The Truth.
Let me first respond to Jesse's comment, because I actually love Jesse, but disagree. quantum computing is an everyone problem, not a Bitcoin problem. Yes, but for reasons I already said on the show, it's a much, much harder problem with Bitcoin. You got to get consensus to upgrade. And there's also Satoshi's coins. What do you do with Satoshi's coins? There's a philosophical problem. Google doesn't have a philosophical problem. So that's the second reason. And then the third reason is different is just that the Bitcoin blockchain is just more cost sensitive than others. So there's at least three reasons that the problem for Bitcoin is much harder.
And I would actually centralized say a fourth reason. This is what I would dig into. And it's an extension of your first reason. So to be clear, and we're talking about, as far as we understand today, the worst case situation for Bitcoin is you get quantum computers that can potentially take an exposed pub key and derive the private key and steal your coins. Now, there's also questions, even if that happens, of like, how long does that take to occur? Like, how many quantum computers are out there? Like, who's the actor? If it's Google, they may not want to hack stuff because they're Google, and then, that's just not what they're going to do. So there's a lot of questions around that. But let's just say, absolute worst case scenario, there's a lot of quantum computers out there. There's unsavory actors. They can break your signatures for exposed pub keys pretty fast. There's also some debate about how many exposed pub keys there are. Do you have an opinion on that?
Not really. There's like 6.5 million.
Yeah. Okay. So
that's pretty easily. That's not really debated.
Well, then never mind. So it's 6.5 million coins. So let's say roughly a third of Bitcoin is in this situation. So the good news is 2/3 is not, When I think about the worst case.
Those are keys though, not coin, right? Like those are addresses where Bitcoin is held, but not necessarily corresponding to the
right.
amount.
Right, so you don't have, and I think in this report we have the number, I forget it offhand, but I agree that's a really important point. It's like weighted by value.
Yeah.
One other really quick thing. Something like four and a half of those 6.5 million
are lost.
There's also that. Well... Some multi-million number is from exchanges that practice address reuse.
Maybe that's what I was thinking.
And I was thinking it was 4 million, maybe it's 2 million, I don't know. But like a sizable number could very quickly be addressed.
Yeah.
Like you just have a handful of companies that can stop doing address reuse and then boom, problem solved.
And so that's where I think I was getting the debate on like how many are in this decentralized clusterfuck, to use a technical term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Satoshi is estimated to have 800,000 to 1 million coins, so at least those. Then there's some other P2PK coins.
So you guys can
see some Taproot coins.
There's some confidence interval stuff happening here. But the general question, and I think why this gets trickier, and I actually haven't gone super deep on this, maybe one of you guys has, but not only does Bitcoin have to reach decentralized consensus, which we've seen is an extreme challenge, but also... Let's say today, somehow we waved a magic wand, everyone agreed, you know what? It's time to upgrade. We've got the post-quantum signatures. Let's go. Bitcoin also has a finite block space. So even if you wanted to move all of those keys or all of those sitting Bitcoin into new addresses, my understanding is there's some debate, and I haven't looked closely. I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but it's not, you can't just do it in one block, right? This could potentially take...
Yeah. We address this in the report, and it's actually, it's a non-issue.
How long would it take?
Well, again, it's a percentage of value.
Yeah.
Like... A day gets most of it.
Oh,
well, like it's very, very, very quick. I mean, to get all of it is maybe 5 or 6 months or something like that. But like the lion's share of the value is very quick.
Okay, so that's good.
And that report runs through the math, so people can look at it.
Exactly. I would want to see it because I know there was some dude went on, I think, Preston Pish's show and was talking about the Capriol dude. And it was just like, oh, this is going to take like 1 to 2 years. And I'd have to, maybe he means the long tail, but that value would be residual.
Well, one of the things we do on the show is dispel some of the misunderstandings.
That's good. And that's why I think this report will be super valuable. But regardless, even in that world, so let's say we realize, oh shit, it's a break glass scenario. We need to move ASAP. Maybe you can move the lion's share of the coins quickly. I think it's also worth noting, I mean, like probably it would tank price some degree in the short term because people would freak out. There'd be a lot of uncertainty, a lot of education would need to happen about what's at risk, what's not. But I think one thing to maybe put everyone's mind at ease to some degree is, Bitcoin is an anti-fragile system. Even if the worst case scenario happens here, it could like totally tank the fiat price for a while. That's certainly on the table. A lot of people wouldn't like that. It is what it is. But it's not like it would kill Bitcoin, right? It's like in the same way that Mt. Gox tanked the Bitcoin price. And that sucked if you were holding and needed to get liquidity in the short term. But if you're, one sat is one sat, then one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin, then like in the long run, whatever, we'll figure it out. That's kind of my take.
We should also, we're going to publish this report and then we'll talk about the report on the show too. So we shouldn't
Yeah, we shouldn't give it all away.
We shouldn't go through the whole report without, you know, it'd be great if the audience could read the report, engage more on it, et cetera.
And
One question I had, like, seriously though, I think it'd be cool to get some of those Google dudes like involved with us in some way, shape, or form. And if you're already home, he's great. One minor thing, I didn't know this. I know DK is our California expert, so maybe he knows this. Did you guys know that Google's quantum research was in Santa Barbara?
Hartman lives there.
That's what I figured. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I went down this little rabbit hole and I was like, why the hell is this coming out?
I didn't know that, but I know Hartman lives there. So
yeah.
I was a California expert.
You're always driving around on trips.
Okay.
Telling us, oh, you know, is our mammoth expert. But it was interesting to me. I didn't realize UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara is apparently like the hub for quantum research.
Isn't that where Hal Finney lived? And he did like quantum stuff. I think he lived in Santa Barbara.
Interesting.
And I think he worked on, I think he had a professional engagement in something related to that.
It would be, yeah. It would be, I had no idea, but it's always interesting to see. And like, there's probably some like military thing at some point. Like you can see where all the little outposts were, but I was shocked. It wasn't like Berkeley or Stanford or something. I was like, wow, interesting.
Cool. Yeah. All right. New topic?
Well, wait, before we finish this one, I think the Google stuff, I think Google is unlikely to be overhyping or overplaying the hand. But another thing that seems to draft off of this is we hear a lot of noise from a bunch of people who I think, I think there's a particular company that people have been investing in that
Project 11.
Yeah.
Project 11. Have we learned anything new about what they're saying about this or anything from Project 11 about this Google news, or is it kind of just?
Well, I mean, just like playing up the hype, right? I mean,
the more
hysteria and concern, warranted or not,
yeah,
they stand to benefit because they have a centralized solution to.
Right.
I haven't seen Blockstream pushing this hard, but they have Liquid, and Liquid could be used as a solution too. So for any of these companies, for anyone talking about this topic, you just need to understand their
motivation
and incentives. And that doesn't mean what they're saying is false or wrong. You just need to understand what their biases might be.
Weigh it appropriately. We had the Project 11 dude. He came to the event, though. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, whatever, it's still
he
worth
it. He was clapping back at Adam back today on Twitter, I saw, and I didn't really. I generally agree with Adam back is saying in general, but including this topic.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I think it's good that there's people from different voices. They can argue it out, but it's better for all of us to have different perspectives. Do you want to answer? Because the people got to know, the audience got to know. So to Matt, what's up, Matt? Welcome. And Jesse, they're asking about this shirt. I want to give a shout out to my dad. He always makes me the dopest shirts. And I'm feeling a good mood today, feeling alive and awake again. So I wanted to wear something fun. This is Bebo. Bebo, believe it or not, I had an alarm clock of this as a child. So you would touch the little...
That explains everything.
Right? Steve, you have no idea how unorthodox my childhood was.
I'm from small town Iowa, so... A little bit of overlap, probably.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, not to mention my dad is on a different plane, but he had me this as a child, and I loved it. And so you tap his little antenna coming out of his head. When he wakes you up, he says, Bebo, Bebo, and you tap it. And anyways, I loved it as a kid. And so now I have a shirt of it. And I have to say, I was a little embarrassed. I posted, apparently this was, I didn't know this, but featured in some Asian cinema. And as I always joked as a kid, because my dad's into weird movies, you know, there's weird movies, there's very weird movies, and then there's Japanese movies. And, I always thought the Japanese are like their art school stuff is the craziest shit you've ever seen in your entire life. Anyway, so I wrongfully assumed that because it was so wild and wacky, this crazy show, that it was Japanese. And I was quickly corrected on Noster, because Noster is, in fact, the hive mind for
source of truth.
Yeah, well, for unorthodox dropouts, Noster is the place to go. And I was quickly corrected within like 5 minutes that no, it is in fact Taiwanese. So the Taiwanese are also pretty wacky.
Okay, there you go.
people want to know.
Jesse says Project 21 million, which makes me think of what one there. Block dropped a teaser today.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
The faucet stuff.
The faucet.
Okay.
Free Bitcoin.
That's what it's a teaser, so I don't want to like spill the beans.
Was this dropped on April 1st or April 3rd?
I think it came out
today.
Today,
yeah.
I think it provided a date of April 6th. So we'll all learn. Well, I'll learn on April 6th. But in that teaser, there was 1 billion with the Bitcoin B symbol, which got a few people riled up because that's more than 21 million Bitcoin.
Yeah. That's 10 BTC, right?
Implying, yeah.
Nice use of BTC. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. that was kind of my reply as well. But no changes to how many Bitcoin there are.
Good.
But apparently a billion sats or Bitcoin faucet. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I thought faucets kind of went out of common use a long time ago because like people would just...
Well, it's valuable
build,
now.
Yeah, it's valuable and people would just build bots just to like, grab them all.
Blocks so how do just you, give away a lot of value.
It's making it rain. But couldn't you just build bots that collect it, or is there some sort of proof of human involved, or you do a partnership with WorldCoin?
No anal swabbing necessary, Jacob.
Self, or what was it? Self protocol.
Right.
That's sorry, Google, sorry Google, to disappoint
Google
you.
Google partnered with a protocol. Yeah. Self.
Right. I mean, I don't know if this is true. I heard some rumors. Block, I don't know, raised a little money trying to change the number of Bitcoin. All of a sudden now, where are these billion BTC coming from? I don't know. It's just a rumor.
Anyway, it's a fun teaser. Yeah. Let's see what's in store.
You have no idea.
I can't talk about it on the show.
He obviously has an idea to do.
Sure.
I know. Like,
I don't want to spoil it for the folks working on that.
I know.
Yeah. But yeah, that's exciting, I think. What else? Block had all kinds of announcements this week.
Oh.
Mini AGI.
Okay. No, let's talk about Mini AGI in a minute, but while we're on Bitcoin, I have to ask, okay, so what the hell is going on with this turning on Bitcoin by default? So the way I thought that was going to work is, oh, you just go pay at a place. They show you a unified QR code. I can pay with Lightning. And I was so excited. And I went and had lunch with Danny, actually. Some interesting thoughts there. Yeah. And, you know, they brought out the little square reader. I have to say, by the way, the little square reader, very nice form factor. It looks good.
The new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one here at PB too. It's nice, right?
It's really nice. Like, I even love it. But, like, the guy, we asked him about it, and he got excited at our ramen shop. He was like, oh, I want to figure it out. And we spent, like, 5 minutes trying to figure out how to turn this thing on. We couldn't turn it on. Yeah. So, like, what's the deal?
Well, we talked about this a little bit on the show a few weeks ago, but I'll go into more detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also just, it's not as simple as just yes or no or on or off or auto enabled or not auto enabled. So a few details.
Yeah.
Last November, Square enabled Bitcoin payments. But the seller had to go into a menu, enable Bitcoin payments. And through that exercise, I learned a lot more about Square. First of all, there's different hardware.
Yeah.
There's different products. There's also 5 different apps you can download from the App Store. So just because it exists here doesn't mean it exists here.
Right.
And just because something launches today doesn't mean that like 4 weeks from now there might not be another thing that launches. So like if there's an app, if your buddy had it, or if the business you're at has an app on their phone, maybe it's not enabled yet.
No, it'll be the handheld reader.
Yeah, so maybe it'll be enabled later. Also, it's very common with launches is
rollout,
right? Yeah. So maybe like a certain number of sellers have it enabled now and not all of them yet. So all of that. And then even there'll be some that there's some really old Square hardware that can't upgrade the software. So they'll never support it. For most hardware though, it can in theory support it, but the seller has to upgrade at least the November release. They don't have to upgrade the latest, or they don't have to upgrade now with this news, but they have to upgrade the software from at least November on.
Okay.
And Square does not do auto updates because like sellers have to proactively update their software. And a lot of small businesses, that's not something that top of mind for them. They're running their business, right? Yep. So all of those are more of a, it's going to take time before you get to ubiquity or close to ubiquity. But let's talk about another challenge too. let's say it's auto-enabled. Well, it's still the situation as a, let's say you're the seller, I'm the customer. I walk in your store. Mm-hmm. It's still the case that I can't just like pay in Bitcoin without talking to you about it.
Why not? But why not unify QR code?
I'll get into that.
Okay.
So first I'll describe the state of things. So I have to tell you, hey, I want to pay in Bitcoin. Or some Square devices have a customer-facing terminal.
Yeah.
I do believe they've improved like from November to where I, as the customer, can tap on the Bitcoin symbol.
Oh.
Just so I don't have to talk to you. I don't have to like announce it, or you don't have to understand it.
Yeah.
I, as the customer, tap on the Bitcoin symbol and then pay in Bitcoin. Awesome. So that it's definitely, there's definitely major improvements with this release. But for situations where I as a customer can't touch the Square software, you still have to have this conversation. Another challenge is, something like 1 in 10 Cash App customers have Bitcoin, or I don't know the specific stats, but like the majority, like there's 60 million active Cash App customers. All of them have dollars. A small number of them have Bitcoin. All 60 million can now pay Square over the Lightning Network.
Exactly.
And there's no fees for the merchant.
Right? Exactly.
So while we all hope for the future where people are paying in Bitcoin, the near-term win for sellers is cut out the fees.
Yeah.
Save the fees, right? And they don't care how it's being achieved, whether someone's paying in Bitcoin or dollars, they don't care. They want to save the fees. So the lion's share of the customers walking in your door that can save you fees are the Cash App customers with 100%. Dollars, right?
Yes.
So another UX challenge here is that those customers, they don't own Bitcoin. They might not know much about Bitcoin. They certainly don't go into the store thinking, I'm going to tap on the Bitcoin symbol to pay in Bitcoin, because they don't have any Bitcoin.
Right.
So that needs to be overcome as well. Actually, we talked about that on the show. Like Haley had the idea of like, maybe the messaging, like the seller needs to be educated on like Lightning Network. Mm-hmm. And then like, what? So the message, like if you're the seller, I'm the customer. I walk in and you could say, hey, I'll give you a discount, Steve, if you pay with Cash App.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like Cash App's a brand that I could be like, I don't have Cash App. But if I have Cash App, I know what it is then.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, great. I can just pay with Cash App. And then whether it's dollars, Bitcoin, whatever, I'm paying with Cash App.
And you know what they should do is at that point of sale, you should also just have it super easy to do the referral, right? So the merchant says, pay with Cash App. I'm going to give you whatever this discount. Oh, by the way, you know, whatever the referral bonus is, collect $10 right now. Sweet the deal.
Oh, yeah. Integrate it with the software. I totally agree with that as well. Then getting back to your question, why can't it be a unified QR code? Why can't it just be automatic? Because the default Square screen for most of the products have a QR code, but it's the Cash App Pay QR code.
Right.
Which has been around for years. And that's if you pay with Cash App, you can do that. And it actually cuts out Visa. Visa is not used.
I used to do that.
Good for you.
To support. Because for years since I've seen Cash App Pay, I was like, one day this QR code will also speak Lightning. So I've been waiting.
Jesse asks, when Square sponsorship? Because we talk about Block. Well, hey, we talk about all kinds of products. Companies I work for, companies we invest in, but also companies we don't invest in. We're also not afraid to like completely rip apart companies we invest in.
And I'm also saying right now, like I was told one thing, it's not working. I want to get to the bottom. So,
Okay. Here's probably the thorniest problem that is not non-obvious. How the user flow for tipping.
Yeah.
And it turns out Bitcoin and Lightning don't support the way people tip. So like if you go to most point of sale terminals, including Square, and you're paying in dollars, you are told, oh, I owe $20 or whatever. Okay, great. And then you tap to pay. Or you somehow give your payment, your credit card, debit card, whatever.
Yeah.
Then you're presented with, would you like to add a tip? And then you can do that. And it handles that for you. But with Bitcoin and Lightning, if you're presenting an invoice, it needs to be the total amount unless you do two separate payments.
Right.
So
I've never considered that. Why does it work that way?
So I'm a little disappointed that like, I did not consider this. I've never seen the Bitcoin community consider this.
Right.
See, Spiral helped start the Bitcoin design community. This is something that I think the design community should have been on top of as well. Yeah.
No one has thought about this.
Sometimes you don't discover problems until you actually try to do it. Yeah. So now we're trying to do it. So because of that, it makes it difficult for Square to unify because the concern is that Square sellers wouldn't like changing the user flow on tipping. So that needs... I haven't given it a lot of deep thought, but people need to be thinking about how to how to address that.
That's a real...
From a maybe change user flows, maybe change customer behavior, seller behavior, maybe change Bitcoin Lightning protocol. I don't know.
And it's a US thing. Because like in Mexico, for example, when you say you want to pay with Terminal, you want to pay with a credit card, they come and they say like, okay, like, do you want a tip? You say like, whatever, 10, 20%, whatever it is. It's lower standards. The US, by the way, it's kind of crazy. We have high tipping standards of like the worst service. It's terrible. But anyways, but then they do that first. So in other countries, it's not an issue. It seems like it's a US cultural thing. I'm open to ideas there. But Steve, on the hardware point you mentioned, so do you know, can you confirm that only hardware that gives you the QR code could even do this in the first place, that the handheld terminals are definitely not turned on?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know. I do know that the rollout is only a portion of sellers.
Yep.
And I think that cuts across products. So it could be rolled out on that product, but just not to every
seller. Well, and for what it's
worth,
seller. Even this guy with the handheld thing, like, he wanted to do it. We couldn't find out how to turn it off.
But if you recall a few weeks ago when this was leaked and we talked about it, I made the point that it's not a victory. Or I mean, it's a very material, good step in the right direction, including some of the UI improvements they've made.
Yeah.
But there's like 10 more things that need to be improved.
Yeah, we have ways to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
But it's progress. And like, you know, November and now we're March, or, you know, I guess April now. So
we should assign as homework. One of us should be able to go and pay at a Square merchant with Bitcoin for a merchant that doesn't know what Bitcoin is next week. I'm going to keep trying everywhere
also,
I go.
Cash App dollars also is a good exercise to do.
And that's all I do, by the way. And also to me, and I think the UX needs to improve a little bit there, because when you go to pay, it says, do you want to pay with Bitcoin or do you want to pay with cash, with dollars, if you have Bitcoin? But if someone has Bitcoin and Cash App, why would you ever use the Bitcoin? Like the way Square has set this up, like, completely obviates like the biggest issue that people always had with spending, which is, oh, like, maybe this is cap gains, or, oh, I don't want to spend my valuable asset. I want to use the weak money. Great. So now, you know, in your point with Lightning Network, all I do is use the weak money. And that's what I do every time. And in fact, I will say this, just in general, the flows for interoperability are getting so much better. Like, if you want to fund, like, you know, I'd wanted to try topping up an Albi wallet with Cash App using dollars, and it was just so smooth. And so awesome. And it's like, I honestly think you should get to the point where, unless you bring your own Bitcoin, you shouldn't even like give people the option to spend their Bitcoin necessarily. It should just be like, throw away dollars over the Lightning Network. That's it.
All this reminds me, what's the current state of the world with like Apple Pay? Can that be enabled where you're paying with like a virtual card that resolves over Lightning?
I don't have all the knowledge on this. It's definitely not been available to third parties in general. I think Cali posted some breakthroughs with one of the Cashew wallets and projects, but I couldn't tell you exactly what the details were. But I think you have to like configure one of your extra hot button physical buttons on the phone to do something, and then you could get it or something. It's not perfect. But I do wonder, you know, you just mentioned like virtual card or something like that. Like Cash App has like 25 million debit cards in existence. Like there are 25 million cards that have been issued or more. I think it's the public number. So like I have Cash App card as part of Apple Pay. Like when I double click, it brings up my Visa card and my Cash App card, right? And I can pay with the Cash App card. So you could, I don't know what all is in, I don't know if you actually, if you need to be a physical debit card issuer to be able to do that, or if you're just a Bitcoin wallet, if there's like a relatively low investment way to issue like some kind of virtual card, that might be a great shortcut.
Because I think about how I use, whenever I see a Square terminal, my default is just to use it like I use everything else,
right,
which is just double tap the side of the Apple Pay.
Yeah.
And if that could be like presented as a card, but then the plumbing beneath the surface actually does whatever I want.
So that's a great point. Needs to be explored, and if it could be done, if it can be done relatively easily and cheaply, every Bitcoin wallet should do that. If it's not, but I mean, my understanding of the current state of the art, though, is that you have to open your app. So if you know, the seller again, for physical retail, like what's going to get me to not only have Bitcoin in my phone and spend Bitcoin, but even dollars on Lightning and Cash App, just to be aware of it and use it, I have to be aware. And I need to be incentivized because otherwise I'm just going to double click Apple Pay and that's so easy.
Yep.
Right.
It's so much easier than opening it. It's marginally better, but that margin matters when you're paying. But if I'm offered like 5% off or something material, then okay, I'll open Cash App and pay that way.
So a couple ideas on this. I'm wondering right now if the move is, since they're already doing this Cash App Pay anyway, and if we really just want to incentivize, like instead of telling people anything, even Bitcoin Lightning, like if you're like really in the weeds, OG, there's a unified QR code, you could bring your Albi or Breeze or Prime, like whatever, knock yourself out. But for like most people, the 99%, you just say, pay with Cash App. And like Cash App Pay just defaults to everything is Bitcoin Lightning, everything. And like internally, I know it's like cheaper and better, like if you just have Cash App and Square just to use their own internal ledger, which they already started with that. But like if you're trying to like juice the network, just turn everything, like everything is just a Lightning payment. And then
I think the main problem there is the tipping flow.
Got it.
Which Matt Cote is saying that in Canada, he thinks it's the opposite. You said some other country too. So yeah, Mexico. So our
one of those other countries.
Well, I forget which one said. Our brothers and sisters that are bordering the United States.
America's
exactly.
And I don't know globally.
The one that gave us the like. Gulf.
So I don't know if it's like a US only thing or if it's split around the world. Who knows? But at least for Square and Cash App, they're predominantly US.
And then you could also just like run like promotions, right? So you make it easy for the seller to give promotions for using that. That's some of the stuff Bob is exploring. But then Cash App or like Square could also just be like, all right, we're going to give away $10 million over this whole year. And it's just like anyone that uses this, you know, and you could do it like a lottery style. You can win $1,000 in Bitcoin lottery, or, you know, every time you use it, you get whatever, unlock the next level. Like there's a lot of ways to juice it.
Yeah, so, I don't know if you guys have run into this. I don't feel like it's frequent. Something that merchants have enabled, but I have at least a couple merchants where I've just used the regular Apple Pay flow.
Yeah.
And then they somehow have added me to their loyalty program. Like, is that a default?
Through Cash App? Through Square. Yeah. A Square thing.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So that feels like...
I'm being honest, I find it kind of annoying, but...
I've just seen it a few times, but I could see that same thing if it were able to be a little bit more, you know, that 3% that you're saving could be sort of incorporated into the messaging of those kinds of loyalty programs so that people could launch the loyalty program and give more visibility to like what enables the loyalty program.
Yeah.
What pays for the rewards.
All right. So we don't frustrate Jesse. We'll talk about but we still have more block topic, but let's talk about a different topic.
What does Jesse want? Oh, he just doesn't want to.
He wants more Square.
He wants Block to...
Only Block.
Sponsor the show because we talk about Block.
So
how about Block here's topic. A fun topic. So okay. OpenAI bought, so a few months ago, Coinbase bought a podcast, right? I forget the name of that podcast or what it even was, but they bought a podcast. And now OpenAI bought in a more substantial announcement, TBPN?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I did not know started the same time that we started this show.
I pointed it out within the first 2 weeks. I was like, look at what they're doing.
I remember that.
Special.
Yeah. I didn't know it was new, though.
Yeah.
I remember you pointing out. I just thought, like, Acquired has been around for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And I just learned of it, like, the past 6 months.
Yeah.
My dear boomer friends.
Anyway, I'm just trying to stay on top of things. But
are we supposed to tell them the latest?
I didn't know it was brand new.
Well, the latest?
What, that we're being acquired?
That Block has acquired PBJ.
Well, we've got our valuation points now. So
starting at $100 million.
Someone tweeted that OpenAI paid $100 million for this, and then someone I know and respect nodded yes.
That's DK.
So, well, I don't know.
Is that
rumor based or like is it confirmed somewhere?
It's not. I haven't confirmed it through some private channel, but I'm saying that seems about right.
Okay, I agree because they just raised $122 billion or whatever.
Yeah,
and this is the theory I sent out, like basically there's just urgency for OpenAI to have a better outlet because Anthropic is in our face every day. Every day there's some new Claude news that we're seeing and we don't see that with OpenAI.
And Grok, Elon, controls the thing they all want to use to get information to. So they don't have their own information outlet. The one thing that really surprised me about this, and I'm curious how much they signed off on this, my understanding is the TBPN show, I kind of viewed that as like in a joke, sort of as a joke, but sort of not. Like every venture fund has to have a podcast now, right? You're seeing, you know, people buying podcasts and making them partners or whatever. Actually, that's a long tried and true strategy in all of the industry. But I kind of saw TBPN. I thought that was like the Founders Fund podcast, basically. Because John Coogan, I think, the guy that started it, he was an entrepreneur in residence at Founders Fund trying a bunch of things and then launched this thing. And I was like, okay, Founders Fund. And then they always feature a lot of Founders Fund companies. And so I'm not saying anything like off the record ever. I just assumed this was their thing. Now, obviously, Founders Fund is a big backer of OpenAI, but they're also a backer of Anthropic and a bunch of other stuff. So I was a little surprised that if this was kind of like the strategic arm of arguably the best venture capital firm in the world, that they would let them go internal on a company. But
I don't think it's... I think you're painting the picture a little bit
black and white.
I think this is like networks of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think everybody understands that being able to communicate messages is high value. If you rewind the clock 20 or 30 years to like pre-social media environment, the very best startups...
I wasn't alive then.
The very best startups would launch to some friends and family and, you know, they'd sort of... Word of mouth would drive everything, right? And so we went through this phase where it became much more popular. You'd see people trying to buy newspapers because you need to sort of get your message out. You see Elon buying Twitter. He wants to be able to control
Bezos
the message.
Bought Washington
Bezos
Post.
Had the Washington Post.
Murdoch. Yeah.
So it's like owning
poor Bezos
a media
buys
channel.
Washington Post when Elon buys Twitter.
Yeah, it's kind of like
Blue
an
Origin,
old media.
SpaceX.
Yeah.
Like,
It is kind of old media versus new media.
And it's kind of rough.
In a sense, like OpenAI doesn't really have a specific mouthpiece that they control or own. The other thing is a lot of the advertisers on TBPN are OpenAI's competitors. So they get to kneecap their competitors' ability to buy their way into visibility.
One question I have on the TBPN thing is like, I mean, I've obviously seen clips from it, but like, so for those who you don't know, I bet a lot of our viewership, I think we're in a very sort of San Francisco bubble.
Yeah.
They may even know what TBPN is. It's like ESPN, but for tech. And it's kind of got this like, basically one thing I've realized is in tech, you've got the people that really love the technology. They're just there tinkering all day. And then you've got the people that if they had been, you know, 6'5" and athletic would have played basketball, but it didn't work out that way. And so it is what it is. And so this is like for those guys, because they're always like, breaking news, this guy signed with them and this is the signing bonus. It's just, it's good, but it's kind of cheesy, but it's literally like, you know, they're
it's
playing.
It's meant to feel like ESPN.
Yeah, it's meant to fulfill these bros' ESPN fantasy. But like, I get it that they probably have
Don't we try to be like ESPN when we talk about basketball?
Steve is ready to join TBPN. It's been real, PBJ. But I mean, my understanding is, I mean, I know most of the tech community, the people with capital, like valuated viewership, I'm sure is very high. But like, I think, weren't their viewer numbers? It was like shockingly low. Like,
but it doesn't matter. It's which viewers. Do you want to be Mr. Beast and have 30 million or whatever, but they're kind of like ready to buy chocolate from you, but not much else.
I understand. So value-weighted, capital-weighted, it's probably extreme, but like, I don't know, just still...
These are the voices you want to influence.
Yeah.
The people listening to TBPN.
Yeah, but
how many subscribers on YouTube did I say? I messaged it out, but we now have 3,600. We got a boost of, I think, 800... 800 or 900 because of Haley's Michael Saylor interview. So thank you, Haley.
I thought it came.
She's delivering all the value
to smash
all
like
the eyeballs to PBJ.
Hit subscribe right now.
But the Presidio Bitcoin channel is, I think, 3,600. And I forget the multiple compared to TBPN. It was maybe 30 or 40 or 80x.
I mean, if $100 million payday,
even if it's 100x and a $1 million value.
You're here first. He wants to join OpenAI.
$100 million OpenAI.
No. I'm here to say we're not
coming. Let's
we're
go.
Not we're not for sale. We're not for sale.
Hell no.
I agree. Independence worth it all.
All 3,600 is
hey, you know, no one has been more anti ads than me. I freaking hate advertising. I think it's just the absolute worst. Like, I'd rather, you know, just do value for value and take 1/10. But
well, I think also, you know, all of these commercial platforms can use money and influence to create a voice for their platform. But like, just like, you know, just like Bitcoin and Lightning and other open source technologies, there isn't really an aggregation of kind of neutral voices for that. So I think in a sense, we can represent that neutrality, but you can't go chasing a $100 million payday. You have to be okay just trying to look for truth and neutrality.
Just being some dudes on a podcast.
Yeah. But I'm fine with the trade-off.
I'm fine with the trade-off. It's fun. That means I get to wear fun shirts like this. So
yeah.
Swag.
Should we should we talk about Gemma 4 being open sourced? I don't know a lot of details, but
I haven't played with it. Have you?
I haven't played with it. So I talked
to one person to play with it and they said it's sick. That's it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I can maybe this can kind of talk a little bit about open source AI in general and go into some of the Nostr stuff, some of the marketplace stuff. So we had an entrepreneur in the office yesterday. I'll go ahead and say it. Christopher David is working on his open agent stuff. I will say, as just like a sort of meta point, it always feels to me like there's moments when ideas time has come, and it feels like we're finally getting to the point where the time has come for open networks to train and serve AI. Which is really exciting to me. He was way ahead of his time a couple of years ago with open agents. When he first launched a marketplace, you could plug in GPUs, get paid out in sats. There wasn't a lot you could do with it on the other end. But now he's starting to see a little bit of traction again with his new idea. Someone released, I saw on Stacker News, I think I shared this with you guys in the last week or so, something called Owls, which is a similar thing. Plug in GPUs, gaming computers, former Ethereum miners, whatever, get paid out in sats. And then obviously the stuff that Jack released yesterday for Block, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about that. I was also very excited to see that one of these was a hive mind protocol for Nostr. So very, pointing in the same direction, obviously.
Sprout.
Yeah. But anyway, so I think there's a lot of cool stuff with open protocols and decentralized AI. Specifically on this, though, one thing I discussed with Christopher, and you know, who's been playing with some of these models, or he plays these models all day, every day, is, I do think there is a major opportunity for like a rallying cry of like, we need a DeepSeek in America. Like, we need a DeepSeek moment for America. We have not seen good open source models. Llama was starting to do that and then just kind of like shat the bed. Meanwhile, Chinese models have just surged ahead. And there's even some question lately, they've been starting to close source more of their stuff too. And not to mention, we don't, as we've talked about, have verifiability for these models. So who knows, like, you know, in the same way that I thought America would have learned his lesson of like, maybe you don't want to be entirely dependent on Chinese supply chain for everything you make. Maybe you don't want to be entirely dependent on China for the open source models. So,
didn't we see one? Did one of you share something in the chat?
Well, about NVIDIA.
Yeah, NVIDIA. You talked about that.
So, both the $26 billion investment claim.
Oh, but what does that mean, though? Did you learn anything more about that?
Open.
Yeah, but.
No, but I mean, they already have an open model.
They're going to train an open model that's supposed to.
They have one. So I don't know how good it is, but like it definitely should be on the radar of being America's, open source, open model.
Yeah.
Also,
open data set idea.
Also, I was told by someone from NVIDIA that they go beyond the Chinese models and all the other models, and that they also disclose the inputs to the model.
That's what I'm talking
about. It's still, I still have it queued up to like go verify that and understand the details of that. Like,
Trust me, bro,
or do they somehow verify? But even if it's trust me, bro, that's better than
it's
everyone
a step
else,
in the right?
So, step on the right. So, we
unless
definitely want need to pay attention. And then Gemma 4, which apparently does really good on benchmarks. It's four different models for different form factors, including phones. And that's exciting. And then it makes it more credible and possible for these peer-to-peer networks, another thing Block announced with Mesh LLM, which McNeil has been working on. And it's great to see that announced in like an early form of it.
We should get him to come here. Is he local?
There's a good chance I'm going to get him here. He's in Australia, but
you heard it here first.
Two weeks.
All right.
2 weeks.
TM.
And do you want to give a little overview of Mesh LLM?
Yeah. So peer-to-peer network. I mean, what Max already said, a peer-to-peer network of GPUs. So if I have a compute job that I don't have enough compute for, I can farm it out on this peer-to-peer network. I don't believe this initial release works, but it doesn't have like any kind of payment mechanism. So it's more of a community, like I'm giving away my GPU for you guys to use or anyone else
like
around
GPU
the world. There's no like proof mechanism that like I'm proving that I'm running the model you're expecting, which is definitely seems reasonable if you're not paying for it. Yeah. But you can imagine the evolution of this roadmap would be like, I want to earn some money by plugging this in and letting other people use it. And then the customer will want some proof that I'm actually doing the computation. Yeah. I'm actually running the model they expect. So those are two complexities that need to be
added. What would be amazing? I'm just thinking out loud, especially if we start to get some of those guys in working with, and we're kind of building a little core here of people, Jesse and Eric and Tony and all these guys that are kind of in and around these ideas. With the mesh network, it is just, trust me, bro, is my understanding of like, we're going to whatever, either split over different experts in the mixture of expert models or different layers in more traditional models. The big question that I have on my mind, and Christian Catalini has been writing a little bit about this from Lightspark. It looks like he's working on something in this area. Is this verifiability? Is this question of verifiability? It would be super cool, one, to fund people from Spiral, like to really like open source what's the latest with the verifiability research. How do you solve that problem? But two, maybe we could do like a mini event here, getting those guys together with like some of the guys that came to Founders You Should Know who are actually working at the very frontier of verifiability and compute, like mix some of those two minds. Because to me, that idea will be cool and a toy in its currency. And that's awesome. Everything starts as a toy. I can't wait to try and can't wait to use it. But to go mainstream, I feel like you need like the best of the best of figuring out that verifiability.
I have good news and bad news for you, Max. I may be bringing a bunch of people here, but it's during your vacation.
Are you serious? Well, it's not a vacation.
Cancel the vacation.
When is it?
It's not a vacation. But
Anjali's going to be like, that bastard. He ruined my vacation.
Well, it was super not a vacation, but if it's important enough, maybe.
And then there's the AI hackathon that Spiral is going to sponsor as well.
Also during when I'm out there. I'm supposed to be offline for 10 days, but...
Yeah.
Okay, well, we should talk more about this.
Yeah, I'll tell you more later. Yeah. Let's see. But... So I have a question for both of you guys, because you're an investor in Open Agents, right?
Yeah, from a
couple
years ago.
Means we all are, or was it the Hivemind fund that were LPs?
Yeah.
Okay. Because all the new exciting stuff you invest in, we're not LPs in that fund, right?
Should join fund?
Yeah, that's, I can only blame myself. Only blame myself.
Well, fund fees are closed, but
Sorry, this is not
no SEC talking SEC regulation. Yeah, yeah, but like
non-solicitation.
All I hear is Fund 3 is going to be fire.
So, what's the let's say that Mesh LLM becomes very successful. So, and it's like an open source project. There's no company behind it. Mm-hmm. There's no business model other than each peer can make money by charging for their GPU. Is that compatible with a vision from the open agents of the world and any commercial peer-to-peer network?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways this could go. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I mean, you could have a proprietary marketplace. I don't think that's the right move. I don't think that's what open agents wants either. I think they want to build a, let's say, view and an interface around an open protocol. And so I think we all want open. I want open. My kind of like take on this, a good way of thinking about this question is... it would be a little bit like saying, okay, you can use Bitcoin as an open protocol to like store your wealth and send payments. Do you really need blocking? Yeah. And it's like, well, if you're like, you know, if you're the dude that's on his computer 24/7 and can use the command line, like probably not, like, you know, unless he wants to interact with the normal world, but he's probably not doing that either. So he's good. Just Bitcoin, CLI, he's ready to rock and roll. For literally almost every other person on the planet, yes. And like, I think you're going to see there's always going to be opportunities to take open protocols and build value add services around them. What's open becomes a commoditized complement. That becomes commodity. But then there's always special things around it. One very obvious example, say you're using one of these marketplaces in the same way that Square does this, and you have a front row. So you just make it easier for people to use this is one thing. It's like, okay, instead of having to do the command line, just click a button or talk to your agent. It's just really, really simple. But then you don't make money on the marketplace itself. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But then you make money on adjacent services. So the most obvious thing is banking, right? So let's say, you know, you've got a fleet of AIs and they're all going to go out there. And I've talked a little bit about this before. This is something I really want to invest in. If you're listening to this, maybe you're working on one of these protocols already and you have this idea. This is one thing I want to invest in. Mm-hmm. How do you bank these ideas? So in the same way that Cash App generates Square lenders or whatever generates a credit score that's better than FICO for the lender because they have access to all their data, right? So they can say, oh, you know, small business, we know it's Christmas time. We know you're going to be in a crunch. Here's your extended loan at a better interest rate. We have better data. Then they're going to do that for Cash App, better FICO score. Amazing. Who's going to do that for agents? So for agents, like I've got this giant fleet of agents that you need to use this open network, but because I have all this data from my interface, I'm going to make you a loan, Mr. Agent. I'm going to underwrite you better than anyone else because I have proprietary data and the other scarce resource, which is capital. And the other potential scarce resource, which is I kiss the ring and the government will let me do this. So the short answer is I want it to be open protocol, permissionless, open to everyone, and there will still be opportunities to build massive companies.
Yeah, I agree with you. In which case, the open agents of the world should, well, to the degree that Mesh LLM becomes successful or some other network
or modified or whatever,
then they should. It's in their interest. I mean, it's in their interest for a network to take off. The probability of one taking off is greater, I think, with an open, permissionless network.
Yes.
And they can profit the way you just talked about.
I think one of the biggest constraints to this idea working is really how do you generate the demand? Like how do you go find the demand?
Yeah.
So like if I haven't talked to Christopher in a while, but if I were sort of talking through with him, I'd want to understand who do you expect are the first 10 or 100 users, maybe already has them.
Right.
But can you go out to an enterprise that values, maybe async, maybe it doesn't have to be a real-time inference, but values some sort of async inference, but needs it really, really cheap.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't have to be interactive, but it needs to come back in 10 or 20 minutes. That might actually be a new set of trade-offs that's kind of underserved at the price point. But I think it takes a little bit of like shoe leather to go find those.
What that is.
Maybe it's research, maybe it's commercial, maybe it's enterprise.
Do you have like any first ideas that jump to mind? Or if you were trying to answer that question, where would you start?
I would guess like the large, all the big companies you've heard of, OpenAI, Anthropic, like they're just flush with cash. They don't really, probably not going to be super like responsive to that, but maybe there's...
Unless you have a podcast.
maybe there's, maybe there's like a university research group that has applied for funding grants, but is not flush with cash the way commercial stuff is.
Yeah.
And maybe they want to do more, but they just don't want to do it at the price points required.
Yeah.
But if you can change that by 10x or 100x, maybe that's a good place to go hunting.
It's a good idea, actually.
Or commercial, think about commercial entities. I haven't really done the list, but actually I would brainstorm this with Claude, Gemini, Gemma, whatever your favorite. But like, what are the list of potential, like prospective customers, who would value the things that this network uniquely does that like traditional ones do not? I think about service delivery is Val AI. I've used it via an API. It's a really nice place if you want to try out a bunch of models. Like you want to see what some new open source Chinese model is, but you don't want to like set it up, install it, whatever.
Get malware.
You can just like use it on Val. And they've got a little playground. You can use it. You can use it with an API token. You pay them, a few cents per API request. So you're paying for something that's otherwise like free, but they manage all the inference and they manage the models and they kind of become a great place to just like be able to get your experience with these models. And if you like one, you could use it there and you can do it at scale there if you want. But you don't necessarily, you get to explore a lot. And it's a huge business.
Yeah. My buddy John gave me an interesting use case as well. It's like imagine you're like a clothes business. I've been introduced lately, both the lady that used to live in my apartment before me just gets like an onslaught of clothes catalogs. Like it's literally a DDoS attack on my mailbox and I can't stop. It's absolutely horrible. And in some recent discussions with Anjali, I've realized like I did not understand, I think, what percentage of GDP is just like shopping. Like just like a lot of people.
What percent is not shopping?
Well, let's put it this way, like
I mean, you're
clothes.
Okay.
And shoes. And I was just like, and man, the price tag on something. I was like, are you but anyways,
you get all your
shoes. Exactly. Dude, I got a swag, one of a kind, baby, N of one. Anyways, it blows my mind. But anyways.
Steve and I were just talking yesterday. He just did a big clothes refresh.
Yes.
I mentioned
October. This is October.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm part of the problem. I paid up for this. But yeah, as DK knows, every decade I go clothes shopping.
Okay, what's decade?
It's time to go.
And it was time to go.
Because
I literally was looking at some of the clothes I'm wearing and they're like 10, 15, 20 years old. But it's like boiling the frog.
It works.
You don't really notice the degradation and the quality of the clothes until you buy new clothes. And it's like, oh, wow.
This is why
I was missing out.
This is why it's always like tough for me to understand sort of like certain normie behaviors. I just, I can't fathom like, oh, I need to like
Yeah, other people actually go clothes shopping, you know, more frequently than every decade.
Yeah, and listen,
and enjoy it.
It turns out,
and it likes, it's like a casual, like you just browse things, and you're like, oh, I could see wearing that, and people like that.
I can see you do a lot of that too, JK.
Well, that's the funny thing. Everybody's always laughing. Like the stuff that I
you mean, actually do that.
No. Oh. This is like, it's like my. This is like free at a conference. This is like I think my wife or mother-in-law or somebody. Like everything I have is just like showed up somehow.
Shows up.
It was all like a gift or leftovers.
Elves.
He found it at the park. It was left behind by someone.
Goodwill.
Free box. Yeah.
Anyways, but that's a joke. But okay. So imagine one of these clothes companies, like, I don't know, Ralph Lauren. And, you know, there's like probably like an infinite number of experiments they could run that could make them money. But there's like certain like, okay, if you're going to a company and you're like, use AI, like everyone's like, I gotta use AI because it's the hot thing. If you can say, I'm going to cut jobs and save money for better or for worse, that's going to sell immediately. People are like, great, that's free money. I get it. If you're like, we have a new Friday activity. Maybe we should close that. But if you believe
that
this is all
proof
real,
that
guys.
This is real.
Not blue screen, not AI.
Proof that we keep this thing, you know, we keep this thing 100. Like, there's no $100 million investment happening here.
Can't afford an air conditioner.
No, it is fucking hot, given I was not feeling well last week.
Hey, this is a family-friendly show.
No, it's not. This guy.
Well, so I'm...
What did I say?
I think our YouTube channel has... Like,
you've actually done a really good job not dropping the F-bomb.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
He dropped it.
But you just dropped
way
it.
Way earlier in the episode.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll search the transcript.
This is number two of the show.
DK is the inappropriate one on this episode. Shit, he's going to whip out Mika next. Like, what is this about? Anyhow, but you can imagine any of these like stores, you could be like, listen, guys, this will make you guaranteed money. You'll play the Claude price to just like save 50%. Okay, cool. You could also be like, hey, what if we created for every single customer a personalized lookbook? And it's just like maybe like a photo of Steve is like aspirational. And it's like, you too could look like this. And then we customize them and like run lots of A/B testing with many different outfits, right? And get people excited and they, you know, they want to spend their money, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that may work. It may not work. It's probably going to work a little bit. Maybe it like moves, you know, revenue 2%, right? 2% is good, but you're not going to pay like Anthropic models, right? So maybe there's a market for these kind
this
of
like
just like long-term
or not,
experiments.
But for like shopping or something.
Well, I wonder if there's actually more reality to this than you are even,
do you even
you're
know,
laughing
are you,
quite
are you,
a bit.
Maybe, do you even know what hot or not is?
Yeah, it's on Facebook Starter.
Sort of.
Right?
A guy we know
started it.
Hotornot.com.
Oh, yeah. This is actually a product. Hot or not.
Got it. Okay. I
independent of Facebook. It actually was post Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Well, it was pre Facebook.
Really? Yeah. When did James do it?
I want to say 2001 or something.
Wow.
And Facebook was 2004.
Oh, okay.
I want to say it was a few years. It's basically the advent, you know, when digital cameras started really becoming popular. It's like upload a photo and you rank it 1 through 10.
Yeah, I'm sure there was no spam on that site. Did he raise venture capital for this?
No. Just generated a lot of cash for a bunch of years.
With ads?
You could like sign up and have a subscription if you want to see how people rate you or something. I don't remember all the mechanics.
You know he went to high school with Mark and Mike, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But he spun...
And Wojcicki sisters.
Oh.
Well.
He spun a bunch
They all went to Palo Alto High.
A bunch of cool stuff out of that. Like the Hot or Not thing was kind of an incubator for a while. And I think actually, was it maybe Steve Chen worked out of the incubator and did like a pre-YouTube type video thing out of there? He also did he did a bunch of like kind of cool internet things, none of which caught on, but were kind of like in the vibe of what was about to happen, you know?
We should start a new PBJ offshoot show, like the History Channel.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, I love that. The history of startups and technology.
History of
my elders
Valley.
Educate me. Yeah. What came before? They educate me on the techniques of the Holone. idea, actually, VibeCode, maybe do this, bot or not. Has someone done this yet? And you're just like, hot or not, but then you have to decide, is it real or is it a bot?
Yeah.
There you go. Good brand. I like the brand name.
Bot or not.
brand is good.
Okay, but you were saying this thing has legs. Or as they would say in the South, that dog will hunt.
Which one?
The idea of like the clothes people.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, did you see this this news? I think it just came out yesterday about this guy who basically did like a GLP-1 lead gen service with AI?
No. But that's you didn't see this? Extremely related to what I'm saying, actually. Interesting.
Oh, well, I think the story, and I've seen the headlines, I haven't read in depth, but I think, you know, there was this bet that I think Sam Altman had made with some group of friends. It was like, we're within a year or two, we're going to have the first single creator $1 billion company.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that 100%.
Well, this is the first kind of evidence that we have.
He made $1 billion in GLP lead?
I think he basically had like Claude and whatever build a bunch of like landing pages and
he didn't buy good stuff, but he used AI tools to build.
Yeah.
I don't want to actually say this one. Normally I give away all my ideas, but actually it just struck me. I know exactly what I can go home and buy good this weekend that will also just like print.
It's a t-shirt shop, isn't it?
No. Much better.
I think he got it to
Max take a note. This must be very big.
But I think it got to four. Did I see $418 million in revenue in the first year?
Or year two.
And it's only 18 months old, and then he hired his brother. So technically, it's not a single person company. But
I mean, the TLDR is just like find a high value ticket item, a high ticket item, do lead gen. And if you're running a whole bunch of experiments, maybe you don't want to like
you can experiment faster than traditional marketers.
And I forget, what's he selling? Like
GLP-1s. I think it's like a GLP-1 lead gen to like the actual, you know, whatever the physician or clinic. It's like telehealth.
Okay.
You acquire the lead and then there's somebody else who actually services it.
Right.
So it's it's not like he's solving health. He's doing lead gen for other companies that are solving health, but like you know, obviously that's.
Oh, does that explain why I saw the Viagra lead gen on your website, on your computer earlier? Is that what you were doing?
Just some research, you know.
Just some research. Sorry, that was using Claude. I don't know.
BTC Moon Guy says, great show, guys. Thanks. So we appreciate the comment. Thank you.
I thought he was saying you've overstayed your welcome.
No, it was a compliment. Yeah.
Thank you.
BTC Thank you.
Should we?
This guy comes all the time. I always appreciate your comment, BTC Moon Guy, that we're jamming. Yes, yeah. We are in fact jamming right here. We're always jamming.
Yeah. And so, you know, Matt, Jose, and Vinny.
Jesse, and Vinny. For, we got some diehards. Much loved.
What
do
people do? People want to hear about the Bitcoin Core privacy win. Which I'm eager to
How many
share.
Minutes
we contain him.
Yeah, I don't know.
We gotta contain him.
We gotta keep the ethos,
guys. Yeah.
Privacy matters.
If you subscribe to the Bitcoin channel, there's an additional show afterwards.
It's from a Spiral grantee as well. So there's that, or we can talk about more block stuff, which is like a AGI. Companies are going to become mini AGI.
I think that's pretty interesting.
I think that's
hierarchy
topic.
To intelligence.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Do you want to give the setup for it or
nope?
Why don't you set us up?
Okay, I read the piece. There was a piece written. I think it was actually written by
Roloff.
Jack Dorsey and Roloff Botha, who's the venture investor from Sequoia, who invested in the first round of
Square, and it's still on the board.
Yeah. So I thought even that detail alone kind of struck me because it's like it's not just showing where Block is moving, but it actually is maybe a little bit of a broader industry commentary. Was kind of what I took that double byline to mean. And, you know, I think it's worth reading because it kind of goes through the, kind of the history of organizations and how, you know, almost like, I don't know if they mentioned like the Joint Stock Corporation, but they sort of talk about how hierarchies help information flow and look at it in like a war, military context and corporation context and how like so much of the reason that we have hierarchies for organizations is just really around the friction and information flow. And so this is an idea that instead of people being kind of these hubs of information flow, you can actually structure an organization so that the information flow happens among the agents and the people are sort of sitting outside in service to guide and direct the agents, but the organization itself is kind of a collection of agents. And it's not really about take a certain person's role and replace it with agents, but it's take all of the information flow and get that all working kind of at the center of the thing. And all the people are at the kind of periphery, kind of the frontier, guiding, directing, orchestrating agents. But that's kind of the future of, I think, Block, and they call it, I think, like a mini AGI. And I think you shared it, and I was like, to me, this this screams yes. This is like, this is the future of all white collar work. It's not unemployment for everybody. It's like orchestration of agents. But if you're a coder, it's obvious to you that you should be doing this. But maybe if you're a marketer, you know, you're not thinking about the world this way. You're thinking about like the activities you've done in the past, you know, write a blog post, you know, contact a business development partner, whatever. Like those kinds of things can be enabled, empowered, and scaled much better if you understand how to do these agents. Go ahead.
Well, and also just reducing friction on information flow, right? I mean, if whatever role you're is at a company, you often, like if you're in marketing or business development, you might have questions that you historically ask the engineers or a PM, and you can't really effectively do your job until you have that knowledge. And then you try to, in a large corporation, you suffer the problems of like, okay, we'll schedule a meeting.
Yeah.
And you try to schedule a meeting. Holy shit, is it hard to schedule a meeting at a large company? Because the large company, you have more people. The more people involved, the probability on any given day or week that someone's out, or they already have a ton of meetings. And
crazy friction.
Right. Yeah, so at a startup, like the three of us are starting a company, we can just meet right now. It's like, if I have a problem, it's like, I'm going to go grab you guys and be like, let's solve this now.
Yeah.
But at a bigger company, it's like, it's 3 weeks until I can find a 25-minute slot on everyone's calendar.
Right.
Well, what if I have this intelligence where the information I previously needed to ask PMs or engineers to get, I can just ask the intelligence, ask the AI, and get like 90% of the time get the right answer. Or at least get 90% of the way there.
Right.
So that I ask the engineer over a text message a much smarter, more pointed question, which can be answered asynchronously. And so getting back, you know, Block did this layoff not too long ago. And then there was this drama around, is it really about AI or is it just BS because they were bloated or whatever? But again, this hierarchy to intelligence, that's not just a PR move. It's happening within Block. Block is using BuilderBot. And BuilderBot is this intelligence that Block is building a world model, which gives you all this intelligence at your fingertips. It's integrated into Slack. Like you can literally ask basically any question, get the answer. You can create PRs, much like we're doing with OriBot, you can do within this 6,000 person company. So it's very powerful.
What's an example of like, if you've seen one yet, maybe you haven't, but like where this world model would slash me or like speed things up?
I don't work on Block products, so I'm not really immersed in this world, but just to play with it, I asked like for data around like, you know, Cash App, like how many Cash App customers hold a non-zero balance in Bitcoin.
Right.
And I got an answer. And it also showed me like the SQL query that, you know, so if I wanted to like vet it. And it also even recommended, here's the three people of the company you could go verify this with.
Right.
It was like super slick.
This is kind of a crazy idea too, because like the information in an organization is often like has kind of intentional silos for certain aspects of the information.
Right.
And how do you sort of rebuild an AI with the right permissions that can make the information?
I did test it to see if I could reveal stuff that shouldn't be revealed or like should.
Like, am I getting fired next week?
And I get
social security numbers?
I didn't have that. I'm afraid to ask that question, but you know, just about like my own cash tags balance or whatever, and it wouldn't tell me that. So I mean, like there's still guardrails in place, but I just found like that query. It's the kind of thing where historically I would have to find out who is the right person or what's the right dashboard or whatever. And it's just such a burden. Here I just ask a question, get an answer. And if I only need this, you know, and I didn't really need the answer, so I didn't need to go vet it. But if I'm like going to use this in a public report or something really want to make sure it's accurate, then it's just made it much easier to then verify either myself because I didn't look at the SQL query or ask so-and-so, which it told me to.
I love all of this, and that's a good concrete example. But I think, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is just saying like middle management no longer necessary. It's like you're either a builder. I mean, everyone's a builder.
Which is what
great.
Block is structuring around three different roles.
Yeah.
And there's the individual contributor, which, and then there's DRI, directly responsible individual. And then player coach. And so player coach is the one that's still manager-like, but player is in the title. like you're expected to contribute, build, and not like in your 10% time, but like a substantial amount of your time.
Seems like a win-win to me.
It's crazy too, to think about, you know, Block is a, how many people were there? 6,000 now after the app. So it's a huge team to try to retool mid-flight, right? You've got the airplane already off the runway and you're traveling across the ocean and you're like, let's rebuild the airplane before we crash. I think it's the right move, but it's also hard to imagine how larger companies and less tech-forward companies are ever going to make this transition.
Yeah,
and
well, again, I mean,
probably not.
Credit to Jack for doing this. I mean, like there's been periods of history where people maybe criticize him because he doesn't make decisions or whatever, but I think like the past 2 to 3 years, he's been making many decisions for Block, and this is like a huge one. My opinion, yeah, I mean, there's some risk with it, but I think the risk of not doing this is far exceeds
agreed
the risk of taking this decision. So seems like a very strong decision.
Yeah.
Imagine what the blueprint of a new company being started today will look like. It will grow like this organically from day one, and everybody will be the, you know, whatever, the IC, the DRI, or the player coach. That'll just be natural. You just won't think to do something else.
I also think it will help with recruiting. So I'm currently trying to recruit a superstar engineer to join Block to work on important stuff. And I think the pitch now, I called it Super Builder when I was, and he's like, well, oh, what's that? And I'm like, oh, I just made it up.
But it sounds good.
But I mean, I made up the term, but I think it's what's now possible at Block, which is, yes, you're an IC, but that doesn't mean you're just like told to go stay in your corner and work on your little pixel of the product or whatever.
Oh, I see.
You know, it's like, no, you are empowered to do big things and really not have a bunch of stuff get in your way.
Basically, the best engineers don't want to be micromanaged or like slow down.
And obviously, you know, if you're launching a new like financial product in Cash App or Square, there's still got to be some checks and balances with legal and compliance and stuff like that. But you know, if you can eliminate 90% of the friction and really empower strong builders, super builders, I think that can be a really effective recruiting tool to attract great talent.
For sure.
I mean, one way I think about it, to me, it just feels like a new database in that sense. Like you're literally just saying we have like a new database. It's a new way of accessing it. And now people can like run experiments and do stuff. And also it makes me think, I know there's like another thread that's a little bit tangential, but like the whole like Elon Doge thing with the government, like imagine if you have like just a little bot doing all that for all the government records too. Like that could be.
I mean, that's what I've said. As much as you may have like a tribe here or there in government, and you have a horse in the race of politics. Yeah. I think ultimately the answer has got to be more.
Yeah.
The same concept applied to like governance of a society.
I could not agree more. And like we're live to watch it happen, gents. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Well, the Bitcoin Core privacy win I will talk about on a future episode.
Thank you, Austin.
I missed it, so you have to tell me after the show. But just so people know, we've got some schedule updates.
All right.
So let's see. We're not doing a show next week.
That's right.
Not at all.
We are doing a show the following week, but on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So which I think is April 14th, if I have correct.
Sounds right.
Noon Pacific, our usual time, but April 14th.
Unless I'm convinced to change my plans based on his visit or something like that happens.
But it's still not so bad to do it that, because since we're missing next week. So we have like an extra 10 days of news and information. And then, so we will not do a show next week. April 14th, we'll be back.
Back.
Acquired at that point.
All righty.
All right.
Is that it?
Wearing fancy new clothes. So.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone. Have a good
weekend.
Enjoy
your vacations, yeah.